The Siege of Vienna, 1529.
Hungary in decline. Last time, Suleiman had defeated the Knights of St. John's on the island of Rhodes, and now he's going to turn and head back into Europe and deal with Hungary. But Hungary is really a mess. It had been an extremely powerful kingdom and really peaks just before the 1500s. The death of the powerful absolutist Hungarian king Matthias Corvinus in 1490 began the decline of Hungary as a major political and military power. It's not because the Ottomans suddenly invaded the country. Ultimately, the Ottomans would attack and take over the area, but the fall of Hungary was the result of greed from the greatest nobles within the country. So it's going to be hollowed out from within and then cracked by the Ottomans a little bit later on. And it's just incredible what happens. The lords of Hungary, the great lords of Hungary, did not want another powerful king. So when Corvinus died, they procured the selection of King Vladislaus II. Now, he will be king from 1490 until 1516. Now, he's known by the Hungarians as being Vladislav the Good, or you can actually translate the term used as okay. And he personally is a very likable fellow. The problem is, he's just a naive pawn. King Vladislav II accepted and signed every petition and document that was put before him. He really didn't want to make anybody mad, and he certainly didn't want to make the noblemen mad because they'd put him in power. He liked being in power. He donated most of the royal estates, the royal regales, and the royal royalties to the nobles. You always have to remember that royal estates are a source of money for the government, for the king. I mean, it may be his money, but it is a source of money that he can always count on. And, of course, there are other things that are associated with the king's estate, the use of land, the rents, and everything else. He gives that to the nobles because he thought it would be a good gesture to try and stabilize and preserve his popularity with these great nobles. His idiotic fiscal and land policy enriched the nobles at Hungary's government's expense. Hungary began to have severe financial problems. Then the nobles in the estate's parliament reduced their taxes by 70% to 80%. Now that led Hungary to being unable to effectively defend itself. Now King Corvinus had a spectacular force. He had a group called the Black Army. And the Black Army were highly paid professional mercenaries. Well, they don't have the money anymore, and the nobles didn't like the fact that they were paid mercenaries by the king, which meant he could use them on them if he needed to, so they were disbanded and dissolved. So there really isn't a standing army at this point. So any army in Hungary is going to have to be the king convincing the nobles to come to the standard. Then the nobles dismantled the national administrative system and the government bureaucracy. So what happens next is, with the bureaucracy gone, while there's bickering going on amongst the nobles, now border guards aren't being paid, fortress garrisons aren't being paid, and fortresses are going to fall into disrepair. For example, when Belgrade was attacked by Suleiman, they only had 700 defenders. They hadn't had, work on the walls done forever. And it's supposed to be one of the main forts protecting Hungary at that point. Well, there was an attempt to pass taxes that would increase the defenses of the country, but that was also stopped by the nobility. What happens is Hungary now devolutes back into the Middle Ages at a time when she's facing a modern superpower. Now, this is a perfect example of the battle that went on throughout European history from the Middle Ages through the Age of Absolutes. You have power people. You have the church, the nobles, and the kings. And for a while, the church has dominance. And then the church kind of drops down and they support kings. And the kings, they gain in power by taking it away from the nobles. But the nobles are always looking for an opportunity to get back their control. You see this even after, Louis XIV, there's the Fronde, the nobles revolting when he's a child. And then, of course, the nobles are looking to get rid of the king. You get a weak king and you move and do that. this goes back and forth and back and forth, but you very rarely see it affect the country from the standpoint of weakening it so miserably. There's some problems in Poland, but the problem in Poland is also exacerbated by the fact that the country has, you know, it's mostly flat terrain. So there's a little natural boundaries to with which to fight. So anyway, it's just disintegrating. Well, in 1514, obviously the people are only going to take this so long. In 1514, there's a major peasant rebellion that breaks out in Hungary. But the Druze rebellion was ruthlessly put down by the nobility, which further weakened the country. Now there isn't any, so the peasants are, what difference does it make whether they're enslaved to Suleiman or enslaved to the local nobles? Now, you understand that the word robot is a Hungarian term for the 6 days a week that a peasant was expected to work the land of the noble. And it was then written into a book in the 1800s, late 1800s, where this Hungarian writer is talking about how this basically turned the serfs and peasants into living automatons, which he called the robots. And that's where we get our mechanical man. So this is really, the people are just not going to support the nobles. And they're not smart enough to realize that doom is coming their way. At the last minute, they still don't see it. Well, in 1521, the Ottoman expanded into southeastern Europe. And then the fall of Belgrade, and then the fall of Szabolcs, which is another major fortification, meant that most of southern Hungary was now indefensible. Now, the new Hungarian king, King Louis II, tries to make changes. But one of the things that helps him out a little is he marries well. He married Mary of Habsburg. And this creates a strong alliance with the Austrian Habsburgs in 1522, which has positives and negatives. Now, when Suleiman the Magnificent, Suleiman I, came to power, he made at least one and possibly two offers to Hungary for peace. But King Louis was very aware of the situation that Hungary had found itself in and how weak they were. But he still believed war was a better option than peace. Because even in peace, the Ottomans raided Hungary and also took over small territories, particularly those that had border castles. And to some extent, he's hoping that perhaps the war will reunite the country and make changes. But something odd has happened in the intervening time period. And it's an incredible change in European political events. What happened was this. In 1525, France's king, Francis I, who had been trying to take over Italy and had been battling the Holy Roman Emperor, the two superpowers, the Italians had fought each other, then brought in outside alliances, and now Italy's being fought over by the big boys. Well, Francis I is defeated in Italy at Pavia, fighting the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V, and was captured and imprisoned. Well, Francis I, after signing the Treaty of Madrid and getting out of prison, came to the conclusion he needed an ally, and he didn't care who it was. So he came to an understanding with Suleiman I, and then signed a formal Franco-Ottoman Empire alliance. Now, France now had an ally against the Holy Roman Empire. And this alliance is actually going to last nearly 300 years. And you can imagine it causes quite a scandal amongst the Christian countries. What is the King of France doing associating with this Muslim? And actually, Francis I was hoping that Suleiman would make war on the Holy Roman Empire just to relieve the pressure that the Holy Roman Empire was putting on France. So, although Suleiman has his own reasons for, you know, attacking Hungary and Eastern Europe, he's got a little bit of an incentive. And, of course, the marriage of the Hungarians to the Habsburg put them right in that situation. What's going to happen next is we're going to have one big battle. King Louis believes that there is still, even though he's defeated, on several smaller fighting areas, and thought he really should retreat. He thought one big battle, one big victory would change it all. Well, it does, but not the way he was looking. Now, the sources for this are The Ottomans by Wheatcraft, The Venture of Islam, Volume 1, 2, and 3 by Hodgson, and The History of the Ottoman Empire in Modern Turkey by Shaw and Shaw.